You're listening to Face Off, episode 71, recorded May 29th, 2010. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
In this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com. All right, so point of news, recording in a new place.
Yeah, so you moved across town, and we're in the new apartment, set up the studio. It's nice, got some nice view, got some windows. Looks like a very executive office looking.
Well, I hope so.
Boxes everywhere, though. Crap everywhere.
I hate moving. This was the first time I've actually moved and had movers come in. So, I've moved, like, my family, you know, my sister, she's moved a lot, and it was always me and my father who ended up moving her all the time. And so he and I have actually had, you know, my father and I have done quite a few moves together. And so it got to the point of when I actually had to move, I couldn't put my dad through it again, like another full move, you know, especially on my account. Usually it's like me and him, you know, going to go take care of my sister's stuff or, you know, moving a couple things. But so this time I thought, oh, I can't do that to his back. So I actually hired some movers, made it a lot nicer. We didn't have them do a whole house move. We had them just move a lot of the big, heavy stuff. But in the end, it worked out really well. I'm glad about it. Like you said, we got stuff everywhere. I don't like moving in general. I don't do it very often.
Nope. But we are right now. We're like a Mac only shop because of those were for you especially. That was the easiest computer hook up because you didn't have.
Yeah.
It's like an all in one unit.
Well, we always record. Yeah, I always record on the iMac anyways. True. But I have yet to set up my other computers and anything. It's like
and your internet's not up yet.
Yes. So that I guess that is the most difficult part. Our internet isn't up, so like for researching the show, Mark and I actually went over to my parents' house, who let us use their internet.
And we also have a Droid tethered.
Yeah, we've been using the Droid tether, which is really fast, actually. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I guess, you know, side point, the 3G speeds of Verizon are really fast. I mean, we tether with the Droids, and when it works, like right now, it's kind of flaky. It's been a little odd off and on, but when it's on, it's hot, and it works really well.
Yep.
I mean, like normal web pages and stuff, it loads. I would almost say, to me, it seemed faster than what I usually used to get with like my Bresnan internet or Quest DSL.
Yeah, I was saying it was like about 3 megabit. So,
yeah. It's pretty bad. So, really fast. That was impressive. But I actually didn't. They just announced in the new Android update, they're going to put tethering in. And the big question is, how is it going to be handled? Because right now you have to root, you know, we have Droids, so we had to root them so that we have the ability to do this, which means we had to basically void our warranty. Mm-hmm. But then the thing is, what they're saying now is Google has announced they're officially going to put in this sort of wireless tethering, and I think regular tethering, into the next Android operating system. And they have just recently announced as well that they're going to leave it up to the phone companies to handle how that is done. So they're going to put the ability in there for the phone company to figure out, you know, how does it handle it? How do they charge it? Do they allow it? You know, so like a phone company can say, no, we don't want to allow tethering. So that sucks because the way we're doing it now, the phone company doesn't know.
Right.
I'm pretty sure what happens is the Droid creates just a proxy server and proxies all of the connections through it. The phone company doesn't know. It just looks like, you know, I'm using a lot of 3G stuff on my phone. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Knowing Verizon, I'm sure they're going to want to charge you for it.
they'll lock it down and charge
like,
you for it.
It'll be on the phone, and it'll just pop up in your applications or whatever. And when you go to click on it, it's like, notice, you will be charged per minute that you use this or per gigabyte or whatever.
Well, they already have like ridiculously restrictive use anyways. I don't know how they get away advertising it as an unlimited data plan, but then tell you that there's like a 5 gigabyte cap.
Yeah, they literally say it's unlimited. And I like questioned the guy and he finally admitted, well, it's 5 gigabytes.
Yeah, that seems like total false advertising. I don't know how you can get away with that.
I remember we were asking about getting just the regular MiFi, like Wi-Fi, just, you know, the Wi-Fi through Verizon. And I was like, you know, what kind of plans do you got? And they're like, the lowest was like, I don't even know. It was like 50 megabytes.
A month,
it was like, yeah, it's like $50 and like 50 megabytes. Bandwidth cap. And I was like, per minute, per hour? And they're like, for a month. I was like, what do you do on the internet that you only use 50 megabytes? It was like, just, I laughed.
Well, even, you know, like if you're on a mobile device and there's sort of websites that are mobile optimized, there could be a chance. But the whole point of that device is to use your computer, which means you're not getting mobile optimized website. You're not getting any optimized content. You're going to be going to things like YouTube and video websites. That is a ridiculously small bandwidth cap. I don't know. I find it frustrating that, and you've, like you said, you've been using your Droid data a lot. I don't use it for a lot of video or anything like that, but use it for podcasts. Mm-hmm. And you said that, you know, you feel really comfortable and that you've never even been close to your 5 gigabyte limit.
I just haven't worried about it. I don't know. I couldn't even imagine. I listen to a new podcast probably every other day because it takes me 2 days probably to listen to one because I only have like a half hour commute for the whole day. But I'm downloading, new podcasts constantly. And they're like 30, 40 megabytes. So,
actually, something about moving. So for the past, I lived in my previous apartment for 4 years. And then before that for 1 year. So for 5 years now, I've walked to work. I've always been within walking distance. And now I'm definitely not within walking distance. So I had my first commute in 5 years yesterday on Friday. It was weird. I think I'm going to try and see if I can wrangle it to take the bus because then I do have, you know, usually a bus will take, I'm assuming probably at least a half an hour to get me to work on campus and a half hour home. And that, I think for me, that is prime time to actually listen to some audiobooks or podcasts because you really have nothing else to do.
Right.
You know, I've always wanted to like been able to have, I don't like the idea of a long commute for driving. But I really like the idea of a long commute for listening to audiobooks and podcasts because I love driving in the car and listening to audiobooks and especially audiobooks because I really concentrate on them well. So
the car is where I listen to all my podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. I remember we talked about this. You were like, I don't really have time to listen to podcasts too. And then when your office moved, you know, what do you have, a 15-minute commute every morning?
Yeah, it's 15 minutes, but that's a half hour every day.
Yeah, and you've been listening to a large amount of podcast, you know, audio content these days.
Yep.
That's good. I'm excited. Anyways, I'm excited to move. I really wish I would have called my ISP earlier so that they would come out here and hook up my internet because I have found I am super dependent upon the internet for so many things. It's really on so many levels. I watch a lot of Netflix streaming now for my entertainment. I play a lot of video games. I listen to streaming radio to fall asleep at night. I mean, it was really, I was weird. I was like, gosh, I've gotten so used to listening to this streaming radio when I fall asleep. I don't know what to do.
We kind of talked about that today, actually. You get used to your internet speed and just the internet being there that you kind of just forget about it. And it's just like a utility that you use. And when you don't have it, it's almost like the power went out or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's always there. It's ubiquitous. You know, I don't know how many times today I've just sat down to my desk, to my computer.
To try to like to go to Google or
something?
Just
check the internet. Yeah, check my email, even though, you know, I have the Droid, which it's shown to me how useful a really good smartphone like that is. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel really good. It's like, wow, this is useful. Without a computer, I'm still able to check my internet, check Facebook, Twitter, and, you know, relatively easily do research for things, you know, look stuff up. It's not as easy, but it's a really good device. But it seriously, internet is everywhere in my life all the time. And it's very hard to not have it. It's all of a sudden, because especially with mobile devices like the iPod Touch, I always have internet. So it's going to be hard. I don't get it. I think the guy isn't going to come out until the 8th of next month. So wow. It's going to be a long, dry spell. I'll probably end up spending quite a few hours at a coffee shop around town just... So I could try and get, well, yeah, anything like I can't even do programming work because all my programming work is on Dropbox, which syncs to the internet. I push and pull from GitHub, which requires an internet connection. If I ever have to install a gem or anything because I'm working in Rails, I don't have internet. It's crazy. And
forget
that's,
about how much you need it.
Yeah. And I'm actually using this tethering. I'm actually really nervous about my 5 gigabyte limit because you never know. Like what? So the Mac, you know, and Linux, I feel really confident in, but I have, you know, a couple Windows machines and you never know what they're doing
they
in the background.
Updates, like 500 mega updates.
Yeah. I turned it on and it was like, I think it already had downloaded them off of Wi-Fi a long time ago. But it was like installing updates and I was like freaking out. I was like, oh, dude, I got to shut this off because they'll grab all of your bandwidth. And Dropbox, I start up the Mac. I was like, close Dropbox when I connect to my tether because that'll eat it up pretty quick. So, Anyways, so ridiculous tangents. Let's get into our geek tool of the week. The geek tool of the week I have is the Zebra F301 fine point pen. I think it's important you have good writing utensils around you at all time. I have learned to love these pens. My wife and I actually fight over them because they're a really fine point pen. I don't like blunt point pens. I like really fine pens so I can do, you know, really precise work with them as much as possible. You don't get ink splots and stuff because it is a really nice fine point. It's ballpoint, so it's not ink. A lot of people like the ink, or even I have a couple of those sort of disposable fountain pens. But the problem is they tend to blot ink, and these just have really good smooth writing. They're what do you call them? They click so you can hide the pen. They are like this sort of really nice aluminum tube with a black grip at the bottom. And the best part is it's like a really good pen and they're really cheap. I always have three or four of these around me. They are seriously my favorite pen. And not because they're fancy and they're really nice. I mean, I have some nice fancy pens that were expensive. These are just, I think, as far as, you know, pen versus price, I think these are hands down the best ones on the market.
Yeah, what I always found was that like the really fancy pens were always really fat, and I never liked that.
Yeah, and they're like heavy or slippery. I have a couple like really nice ones that are actually they're slippery. I can't use it because I go to write with it and it sort of squeezes out of my.
Or you know what's the worst is you have like the ones where you twist counterclockwise or whatever, and the other part clockwise to retract the actual pen part, and you'll be writing, and all of a sudden, like it'll be twisting and turning, and by the time you get done with the sentence, you're like, the pen went back into its hole.
Yeah, or it's like really low, and you're kind of like, why isn't this? And it's like scraping, and it's terrible. It's
kind of funny.
Yeah, so check it out. We have a link to them in the show, so you can buy an 18 pack. What was the price on these?
$18.33.
So for a 9 pack, it's $18.33. I get them at my local university bookstore for I think a little over $1. A pen. But seriously, I think these are great pens. Like I said, me and my wife, we fight over them because like I'll see her write with one and I'm like, hey, that's my pen. She's like, no, it's not. And we have, you know, probably 10 of them floating around the house. Really good pens. I highly recommend them. All right, let's get into our web apps. The first web app I want to talk about is, I think, a really cool idea. We talked about this before. I can't remember what the web app was, but it was a way to send letters online. So you went to a web app and you wrote a letter, and the web app, the guy behind the web app would, you know, print it and mail it off for you.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Mailfinch actually allows you to do bulk mailings in sort of a similar way. So you upload your PDF document of what you want to mail it to. They print it and fold it and put it in an envelope, and then they mail it out by the next business day. Look at the pricing for this. They have like a free trial, but in general, I mean, you were talking about this. It's a pain. It really is to send out bulk mailing sometimes because you have to print them all out. You have to fold them yourself, you know, and usually, you know, as a business, you're not equipped for it. You know, if you have a laser printer, then you're you know, halfway there, but it's still not really easy. You got a stack of 500 things that you have to mail out, so you have to fold them all sort of the three the same way. Then when you go to print out the envelopes, you have to make sure you get them in the printer the right way, and you always do like three or four test prints before you figure out which way you need to lay the envelope in the envelope slot before it'll print out the correct way. It's kind of a pain. It's definitely not as easy as you want it to be.
You got to keep the letters in order of the papers. If you mix them up, then you got to go find the addresses. Collation, and the names and
definitely.
So this is kind of nice. I assume you just upload like a CS, like comma separated value list of your customers at names and addresses and a PDF, and they do the rest. They have some big companies signed on: Century 21, MetLife.
Yeah. So the different plans are: for $25 a month, you get 20 stamps. It's $2 for each additional stamp. So, you know, it includes all the printing and shipping. You can schedule when you want things to come out. You can do campaign and list management. So for $25 a month, you can send about 20 things out. For $100 a month, you get 100 stamps, and then it's $1.50 for each additional stamp. So if you have a bigger plan, you know, if you go over your allotted amount, it is cheaper. And then, you know, same thing, you can schedule. I mean, that's cool. You can prepare your printing and everything, and then say, I want it printed and I want it mailed out on this day.
And they'll
print it and get it together for you ahead of time, which is really nice. And then there's the Enterprise, which is $500. You get 525 stamps. It's $1.25 each additional stamp, and you get the scheduling, all-inclusive printing, shipping. I mean, the big thing is just it we often talk about this. Professionals should be able to do what professionals do best. And sometimes you need to outsource stuff because it just is much more efficient. Mm-hmm. And, you know, should I have my computer, you know, my computer programmer who writes web applications spend 4 hours folding paper and stuffing it in an envelope? Probably not worth your time if you can get this and this will do it for you.
Yeah, definitely. That and mail merges are just a pain.
I know, it was always
talking
funny.
From a guy like a programmer that has to deal with that, because, you know, a lot of people are not very tech savvy and they're like, you know, can you help me with this mail merge? It's like, oh, you know, that's not really my specialty, but I guess. And it just, I hate it.
So check it out. It's at mailfinch.com. I think it's a great idea. I sort of love this merging of web applications in real life to help us do things like, you know, snail mail is probably never going to go away. You know, it's just some people don't like it, and sometimes you just want a physical connection. So it's cool that this is a web app that will do that for you. Snailmail.com. Our next web app that we want to talk about is called gotapi.com. And what this is, it's a really cool little website that combines a lot of the different documentation APIs for different languages, all kinds of different stuff. So you can go, you know, from one page, you can see an API for HTML, CSS2, JavaScript DOM. You know, prototype, jQuery, they have a bunch of XML ones, C, C++, PHP, Ruby, Ruby on Rails, Python, Perl, Erlang.
JUnit, Selenium, we talked about that.
Yeah, exactly. Groovy, Drupal, Flickr API, MySQL, tons of Java stuff. All in one spot. So, you know, what's cool is the ones that you like, you can click it, the actual language, and it puts it as a tab up top. So I use a lot of HTML. You know, I obviously do a lot of Ruby on Rails. And let me see here. So I also have, you know, let's say I tend to do a lot of CSS, a lot of CSS. And then that way, you know, then they're kind of like these little API tabs at the top. And then you can just search in the search box, and it'll find what you want. So Ruby on Rails, let's say I want to... you know, link to remote right there, action view helper, prototype helper, boom, click it. There is the actual Ruby on Rails documentation for it. And it's just kind of a way to, oftentimes, you know, it's a pain to keep all of these together.
Yeah.
I used, in the past, I have used API Doc, which has Ruby on Rails, and RSpec documentation. And it has some extra features that I like about it. But the one of the big reasons I went there is because it had all of those in one spot. And I don't have to remember to go to the Ruby on Rails documentation and then remember to go to the, RSpec documentation. It's all in one spot. Well, this is sort of the ultimate of that. It's a combination of a bunch of different APIs. So, you know, if you're doing a web app, you're going to need HTML and CSS, but you're doing it in Groovy 1.1 beta, you know, and you're using Selenium for your testing, you know, pop all those tabs up there, do your quick searches to them. And then if you want, it looks like you can add other APIs. I'm not sure how that works, but, you know, right now they're saying that the new version 2.0 of God API is coming out. So it's probably going to be much better.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So it's easy to remember too. Just gotapi.com.
Yeah. Cause have you got API, Mark?
I use a lot of them.
I've got it. Yeah, so me too. So check it out, gotapi.com. I really like it. So if you have some news, a follow-up or web application, or even a geek tool suggestion, if you found a really cool geek tool that you want to share with the world, let us know. Go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Let us know. Tweet us out. Email us. We want to hear from you guys because, honestly, if you have a really cool geek tool out there, I want to know about it because I'll probably buy it too. Because that's how I roll. All right.
So this week's topic is technology trends of, you know, today, you know, 2010. And so actually Eric Wendelin, one of our listeners, sent in a PDF of a study done by ThoughtWorks, which lists, it's really cool because it lists a lot of technologies that are currently being used, things that are up and coming, stuff that, you know, and they categorize them as like, you know, these are things that you need to assess. This might be something that's like a little bit out there on the edge, very new, bleeding edge, something that's like, hey, you should be trialing this. This is something that's been a little bit past the alpha stage. It's like a lot of people are starting to use it, but it's not proven. And right. Then, you know, you got the adopt where it's like the industry is definitely moving towards this direction or they're already there.
So it's called the Technology Radar, which is kind of cool because if you get the document, which you can get the link to it in our show notes, you know, it is kind of presented as like a, as a sort of radar screen where, like you said, you know, the inner ring is adopt and it kind of says like, you know, you should be trialing this or you should be assessing this, or some of them you say, you know, hold off on, because not only does it show the up and coming stuff, it also shows you, you know, as trends start dying away as well.
Right. And, you know, a lot of things, you know, as programmers and things, we're always wanting to use the greatest, coolest tool, you know. But sometimes, especially for large corporations and stuff, it costs a lot of money and a lot of training to switch technologies. And so you want to really be sure that you pick a technology that is definitely going to be here to stay. So this kind of helps you weed out some of the technologies that are a little bit too new.
Right.
And try to start, like you said, getting away from some of the technologies that are starting to die, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about the first chunk of the radar, which is techniques. What we're seeing from this is it looks like we're seeing not a lot of things are fading away, but we're seeing sort of a continued trend towards doing continuous deployment, which we've actually played with a little bit with things like I would assume things like Capistrano would be like, you know, continuous deployment or just the thought that, you know, you are always building workable code and that code should always be pushed up. You know, you shouldn't wait for a big giant version before you push it all up. Which is cool. You know, we're seeing a lot more cloud-based software as a services sort of products out there. And one of the benefits of that is that you aren't sort of, you know, buying these giant upgrades. A lot of big enterprise software, the big cost was that, you know, after 2 years, you would have to buy the new upgrade. And with these, you know, sort of like one of the reasons like I like Google Apps is I get all the new features without having to buy an upgrade. You know, it's software as a service. It's, you know, it's out there in the cloud. It's not something I've installed and have to pay for upgrades. I like that. And this kind of fits in with that where, you know, it's like it rather than keeping it, you know, as a version that people are seeing the new version of, you know, it's just it's always this service, you know, it's always this product and it's always getting continuously deployed.
I definitely saw the benefits of this when I in my product, I started, you know, kind of releasing and kind of, well, my release, I would do the code and then I'd say, okay, now this is my release version. Then I'd go in by hand and make sure everything is all ready for release and then copy the files onto the web server and then make links and everything. And I you know, kind of read about, you know, one-click deployments and you should have a build script. So when you do have a bug or a feature, you can just, you know, release rapidly and things.
Right.
And I started doing that and it made a huge difference. I can definitely see the benefits of that.
Nice. Another sort of positive trend in this category is the web as a platform. And that's just, we are seeing the web is, it is in our lives. It is constant. And I think a lot of traditional desktop applications are starting to go the way of the dodo bird because the web is such a powerful platform anymore.
It is, and you see a lot of, and we're going to talk about a little bit of this stuff, but you see a lot of sites interacting with other sites, offering APIs, offering ways to communicate, and offer, it's more of a platform, like you said, more apps are connecting together instead of just kind of singularity
right.
all over the place. So.
Exactly.
Evolutionary DB. I think this also ties into NoSQL and some of that. It's like your database is constantly evolving with the new features and stuff that you're adding in instead of just designing it once. And this is the app. And then the next revision, you totally redesign the database and everything.
So. Right. Another interesting one that I had to look up. I knew about these concepts, but I didn't know about the technical term of it. And it's called polyglot programming. And I really started getting into this a lot because it's pretty big in the Ruby community right now. So what a lot of them, you know, you have the math standard Ruby, which is, you know, the official Ruby. And so what you're seeing now is we're seeing a lot of different ways of processing that Ruby code that aren't the standard, you know, math, you know, compiled to bytecode. So there is JRuby, which, you know, takes your Ruby code and runs it under the Java JVM. We're seeing, you know, Enterprise Ruby, which is basically just sort of standard Ruby, but, you know, made to be optimized to be really, really fast, really, really on the job. And there's another one out there that's called Rubinius. I don't know enough about it, but I mean, it took me a while because it is a hard thing to understand. You know, you think like, well, no, I'm programming Ruby and it, you know, Ruby works one way, but in the end, code is code and how it's taken care of in the back end can really be changed a lot. You know, mm-hmm. if you can write a way for Java to compile your Ruby, then, you know, that's okay. It took me the longest time to figure that out because you just think, you know, my programming language is this, but in the end, it's just a text file with instructions and whatever you used, you know, to parse those instructions it can change.
That, and you get the benefit of being able to, like, in the Java world, you know, you get to be able to use Java functions in Ruby.
Yeah.
I mean, that you're tying the languages together.
You can leverage, yeah, you can leverage Java libraries, and you can, and like the JVM is just really fast. There's been a lot of time optimized or a lot of time spent optimizing Java. So that's really cool. And it's cool to see that happen, you know, so that, I mean, what we've seen with a lot of things, like especially again in the Ruby community, they like to take things and make it so you write Ruby code for them. So things like we've talked about HAML and SAS, you know, it's basically using, you know, Ruby, you're writing Ruby code and it compiles out to a different language. And that's cool. Same with something like Chef, where you're writing Ruby code that turns itself into system administration commands. And that's sort of the same way. It's like, know what you know. I know Ruby, but however it gets taken care of in the back end or what it does, you know, learn your language that you like and use and, you know, swap things in the back end for it. So.
Another thing that's on in kind of like the trial that a lot of people are using is automation and technical tests. We talked about test-driven development, unit tests. It seems like that's, you know, it's more and more popular.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on to the second quadrant of the graph, which is tools. And so the one that really hit me here is visualization for business data. And I find it very surprising that this was hitting the assesses stage and moving into trial, because this seems like a no-brainer to me. I've always loved getting data and trying to find different ways to visualize it, because you seem to be able to make, it just helps you get a bigger picture. You feel like you're, you know, a little more in touch with the data. So I was surprised to see that more people aren't doing this, because I mean, I know I don't like looking at a giant spreadsheet of numbers. I like to see data visualizations of it. I like to see, you know, I think it puts it out there and you can do some interesting interpretations to it that you might not be able to with just straight numbers.
Another one is, which seems like it should be in the adopt stage just because, you know, we're kind of programmers, is distributed version control. That is in the trial stage, but that's definitely coming on strong. I wouldn't, you know, doubt that wouldn't be in the adopt soon.
Well, you know, it's one of those things like you were talking about. A lot of these are big organizations, and yeah, it's, you know, it's really hard, especially when you have been using something like Subversion, which surprisingly moved from the trial to the adopt stage. It got more if you asked me, I would say Subversion's on the way out.
Right.
But I think a lot of these companies were either using CVS or no version control at all.
That's true.
And so that's why Subversion has moved up, because it's finally like, yeah, Subversion is, you know, that's something that is solid. And to someone like me, I was like, what? No, that's on its way out, man. Git is, you know, the way of the future, distributed version control all the way, which is kind of, you know, lagging behind on this. But these are really big organizations. It takes a lot of time to change that attitude, you know, or just the fact that it's like, if it's working, don't break, you know, if it's working, don't, or if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right.
You know, and so they say, well, you know, we finally got version control up. We're actually programming using, you know, version control. That's good. Why change it now? And then, you know, if you can't really get a good argument articulating why distributed is better, then it's just not a convincing argument. And why would I have to retrain my entire team? You know, because none of them are using Git anyways. We just got them to use right. Subversion, which that was, you know, that was a big step anyways.
Yeah, one of the criticisms is that the distributed had a steeper learning curve. And like you said, it's easy for us to say, oh, let's start a new project. And what version control are we going to use? Well, Git, of course, or Mercurial or, you know, something distributed at least. Whereas a large company, they have, you know, just years or months, you know, of history of programming, revision changes and all that stuff. And they don't really want to lose that. They don't want to migrate it. They just want it works. Right. You know, why change it?
Right, another couple specific tools in here that piqued my or that interested me was GitHub is a specific tool mentioned a lot, which I think I agree with. I use a lot.
Yeah, for a website to be listed on here, that's pretty. Totally. I mean, that's yeah.
MongoDB is another specific product that's mentioned that's interesting. I've been looking at Mongo a lot.
And that's actually in trial. That's like,
yeah,
that's not even assess. That's like right up in there. And you know, what surprised me is
it's not. It's an assess.
Isn't it next gen triangle? There?
Next gen test tools is that triangle. MongoDB is right next to.
So, well, you know, the interesting thing here is there's so many NoSQL databases, and Mongo made it on the thing.
Right.
Like the one to
NoSQL as a concept made it into the assesses. you know, a little bit ahead of Mongo, but mm-hmm. Mongo is in the same category. So yeah, I agree. That's really cool. I had told someone, we were talking a little while ago, I said that I think that MongoDB is going to end up being the MySQL of you know, document of NoSQL databases, just because it was getting a lot of traction, and it just seems kind of like the go-to one that people will move towards in the future. And I think this is you know, showing me that I was right in kind of thinking that.
Yeah, out of all of them, you know, CouchDB, Redis, you know, all these different ones, Mongo to be making on the list, I think it shows it's pretty popular. It's
getting some traction, which we are still planning. We're researching a document DB episode, and I probably will feature a lot of Mongo. Or it may even, to do it, we may get an interview with someone involved with Mongo is what we're trying to get. So that is, we will have more details for that in the future. The next quadrant is languages. And this is interesting. This one has changed a lot. So one big one is these functional languages were sort of a thing all by themselves. And they have been split out between Clojure, Scala, and F#. With Clojure kind of being about the same level as functional languages and Scala and F#, you know, backing off a little bit. Nothing wrong with that. HTML5 is on the list. You know, Groovy's domain-specific languages are on there, which is really cool. We've talked about it's really easy. If you're a Ruby person, you know about these because it's really easy to do them in Ruby because it's a very flexible language. You can kind of form to make another language really easily.
JavaScript is a first-class language, made it to the adopt. So this is stuff like Node.js. You know, this is stuff like using JavaScript in the server side and as an actual language instead of just a scripting
Side. I've noticed this. It used to be that basically people just did a lot of complaining about JavaScript because it was a pain. But I've heard from more and more computer scientists that know a lot about, you know, languages and computer science that JavaScript has some really interesting and advanced sort of language features in it that they really like. And now that it's getting formalized and used a lot more, I think it's sort of hitting that level where it is capable to be, you know, moved into other things. Which kind of, you know, moves into that we're talking about where, you know, you set up sort of a language, but what you do with that language in the back end totally can change because it's just been, you know, like a basically a, you know, a scripting language for websites for the longest time. And now it's moving into this phase of being, you know, a back end language doing things.
One language we don't typically talk about on this show much just because we don't have as much experience with it is C#. Yeah. But we have to note that it went from assess to adopt, like immediately it jumped over there. It's gaining some popularity.
Yeah, exactly. I know, same thing. Actually, a lot of people I know that really like C#, I've also found kind of like JavaScript. But definitely C#. There's some languages I think that you find when people start playing around with them, they really like them. Like I said, I think Ruby's one, PHP obviously, and C# is another one. People are like, oh, I'm going to do some C#, and usually after a while they're like, I really like C#, and I don't think I'd want to work in anything else.
Yep.
All right, so the last quadrant we want to talk about is the platforms quadrant, which I don't know quite a bit as much about. Some of the big ones here obviously is IE6 end of life,
and that's definitely in the adopt stage. It's like it's on its way out for good this time.
Yeah, finally. People, big companies are saying no, we're not supporting IE6, and you know these applications that are only work on IE6, they have got to get out of there. You know, this is ridiculous.
The iPhone is definitely considered a platform that's here to stay. We know that. I mean, there's so many iPhone apps and
totally
Android is moving up. Amazon Cloud kind of moved.
Yeah, the big thing. Yeah, cloud was kind of a concept earlier that people have been talking about, but this year it really matured between, you know, things like Amazon EC2 and S3 are you know, big cloud services. Google App Engine is another good example of that. They definitely sort of broke out. Azure, which is the Microsoft version of Google App Engine, if I understand it correctly. Not quite as far up there. But, you know, these are the kind of things I think that take time. You know, platforms they're a really hard thing. Like, do you really want to put your entire business model hanging on Facebook? You know, some companies like Zynga are figuring that you're finding that that's tough because, you know, the old Zuck, he gets in there and he gets a little greedy and all of a sudden, you know, you're getting your amount of money cut and that's tough. Same thing with like Google App Engine. You know, if you program something in Google App Engine, it really only kind of works in Google App Engine. It's difficult to port it over to other stuff. So it's really kind of a big decision that you want to make that your platform.
Things to look forward to, IE8, these are kind of distant, IE8 and the Google Web Toolkit.
Absolutely. So definitely check out the links to this. It's funny that this is done by the company called ThoughtWorks. One of my coworkers just got a job at ThoughtWorks, and she's very excited, and it sounds like a really cool company. And the fact that it's putting out cool documents like this sort of proves to me that it would be a great company to work for. So check it out. This is the Technology Radar done by the ThoughtWorks Technical Advisory Board. Really cool document. There's also, you know, we just kind of skimmed over it. There's a lot of information there. There's some text you can read about the different trends and check them out. You know, obviously we ended up looking at a lot of things on the, just on the radar and looking them up because we're like, whoa, what's this cool thing?
Yeah, definitely.
And there's a lot of cool stuff to learn on there. So check it out. That wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to remind you guys you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. You can also leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. We love to hear from you guys. Please go there and tell us what you think or anything we can do to make the show better. And thank you. We will see you next week.